The day after Thanksgiving is called Black Friday, a day that has expanded into Thanksgiving Day this year and now even exported to England and Europe so that crowds are trampling each other when the stores open. Not one of our best exports. But we all know that Black Friday comes from the idea that retailers enter a period of profit on that busiest retailing day of the year. Black Friday, as in the sense of being in the black. A less well-known and perhaps more important designation of that Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, is the unofficial National Day of Listening. It's a day when Americans are urged to listen to each other. It comes on a day when many families are together and the encouragement is to sit down and just listen to what each other has to say, what we're thinking, to listen to our stories. It all came out of the National Oral History Project called StoryCorps. You're probably familiar with StoryCorps if you listen to the radio. And I think few things could be more appropriate for our current social political climate than to have Black Friday coincide with listening to one another. After all, we all have our stories to tell, and at the root of much of the shouting and destruction in Ferguson and elsewhere is that awful feeling that comes with the phrase, "You're not listening to me." Whether in home or business or in Congress or in communities, there are few things more frustrating or anger-producing than the sense that no one is listening to you. Clearly, there is very little that we ourselves can do to intervene in the violence we have witnessed just this week, other than to pray for peace. But there is something we can do. We can start where we are, and that means taking time to listen to one another, especially to those of other races. We all have our stories. We all have our perspective. And they need to be shared. Besides, storytelling is sort of in our DNA. It's fun. How many of us has ever failed to hear a child say, "Tell me a story"? And oh, how we love good storytellers like Garrison Keillor. We have easily become emotionally involved in stories, good stories that we know are fictional. How many of you are deeply emotionally involved in that sophisticated soap opera we know as Downton Abbey? From the countess to the kitchen maid, we hang on to every syllable as if it's all true. We get caught up in the story. We love storytelling. I'm convinced that it is not more information that people crave. We are up to our eyeballs in information. It's not more statistics about crime or racial profiling or injustices that are most needed in our day. We've all experienced the fact that just one person, one friend who truly sits down and actively listens to us, who is truly understanding of us, who takes the trouble to listen to our story, can make all the difference in the world. It can change our lives. This gift of truly listening to one another must somehow be constructed on a larger scale. It must come in homes and communities and churches and neighborhoods. It must come in industry and politics and race relations. If we do not listen to one another and hear each other's stories, we are doomed to live in our little silos of self-understanding and never venture out to see the world through someone else's eyes. One way of our thinking about being together in a church is that a church is the merging of all our stories. You have a story to tell, every one of you. I have a story to tell. They were once completely separate stories. But in being church together, our stories begin to merge. And as we listen to one another, our individual life stories begin to be our story. Not just my story and your story, but our story. And you can always know when a new member is truly becoming incorporated into the church by listening to the new member's language. When the new member begins to speak of the church as our church rather than your church, you can know that that new member is truly being incorporated into the fellowship of the church. And the same is true in communities and even a nation. That transition from the word your to the word our is absolutely crucial. As we begin to look forward to the celebration of the birth of Jesus, we are all in great need of stories of hope and encouragement. We're battered. We're bruised from the bad news we have endured. Nothing travels faster than the speed of light except one thing, bad news. We're desperate for good news. So we read a passage like the one we read today, that is framed in apocalyptic language. And one thing about apocalyptic language is that it always arises during times of bad news. And that's exactly what was happening when the Gospel of Mark was written. This is a text that was written for Christians at a time of crisis in the life of the early church. The first wave of persecution had begun, and the tiny congregations that had been meeting in relative safety suddenly had to flee to the hills in order to survive. And out of that despair and crisis comes the Gospel of Mark. Now, the author of the Gospel of Mark gathered together all the authentic sayings of Jesus that he or she could find and placed them in some coherent order to compile what we believe to be the earliest written gospel. Now, please don't be thrown when I say he or she. The Gospel of Mark is anonymous. We really don't know who wrote it. In the midst of their crisis of faith, This gospel stood as a witness to the faithful God whose presence is made known even in the midst of darkness and bad news. So this unique, sometimes even strange apocalyptic language is always a language of hope. The Gospel of Mark is reminding those Christians who had almost lost all hope, who saw no solution to the violence that surrounded them and threatened their safety, that in spite of all that was happening, God was, God is, and God will be. That is to say, apocalyptic language may sound strange to us, but to them it was always a language of hope. This language was written to people who were worn down by bad news. It reminded people from the first century to the 21st century that our ultimate hope does not lie in the Dow Jones Index. It does not lie in the military. It does not rest on the results of political elections. It does not rely on housing prices or budgets or the state of the economy. All of those are important. They are measures that reflect the daily levels of hopefulness in our times, but they are not the ultimate level of hope. Our ultimate hope does not come from these things. In the most difficult of times, Jesus said in this text, not only to watch for signs of hope, but if you look at it closely, he's saying, watch for signs of hope in the darkest of times. Here's how he put it. Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come in the evening or at midnight or at cockcrow or at dawn. That was very carefully selected language because the Roman army divided the night into four watches. The evening watch was from 6 to 9 p.m. The midnight watch was from 9 p.m. to midnight. The cockcrow watch was from midnight to 3 a.m. And the dawn watch was from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. Those were the darkest times, times when there was no sign of a bright future. That's when he's saying to keep alert. Jesus is saying that there is a future even in the darkest of times, and at the conclusion of that future, there is God. The same God who was with us in the past and who is with us now. Now, Christian faith is not blind. Christian faith is realistic. It sees the world's situation as clearly as anyone else. But we do not and we will not participate in a glum and gloomy despair of those who see no hope in the great challenges before us, such as racial reconciliation, such as peace in the Middle East, and poverty, and the eradication of disease. We are people of hope. Even in the most challenging of times, because our ultimate hope is not dependent on that list of issues that normally comprises the content of the evening news. So here we are at Advent, the first Sunday. It's a journey that we travel in Advent. It's a journey of listening to that old, old story that has been proclaimed in this place for so many years at this time of year. We listen to that story again. But each year when we listen to it, we try to listen to it with new ears, to hear something of a renewed hope in our particular time. You remember that at the entrance to Dante's Inferno, there was a sign that said, "All hope abandon, ye who enter here." I wonder what sign we have at the entrance to this church. What if by spirit or maybe by letter, there was a sign that said, "All hope claim and celebrate, ye who enter here." We journey under the banner of faith, hope, and love, not doom, gloom, and despair. Here we sing, "O God, our help in ages past, our hope for years to come." Here we hold up a cross and we sing not dirges, we sing alleluias, even in the face of a cross. Here we declare a word of encouragement to one another and to the world, a word of hope that will never die.